Welcome everyone. This year, March 11th, marks the 20th anniversary of the worst terrorist attack in Spain. It took place in 2004 in Madrid and in a number of surrounding suburbs, and it resulted in the death of 193 people, in addition to some 2,000 injured as a result of the blast. To this day, it is the worst terrorist attack in the history of Spain and one of the deadliest in Europe. Just what happened? Well, on Thursday morning, March 11th, 2004, 13 backpacks were left in commuter trains, known as cercanías, as they headed for the capital. They were packed with explosives. During a three-minute period from 7:37 to 7:40, 10 of them went off inside the trains. They had been activated remotely with cell phones. The trains were located at different spots. One was in the central Madrid train station of Atocha. Another was about 1 kilometer outside the station. It was waiting on the tracks to pull in, so it was stopped. Another was at a station in a suburb called Santa Eugenia, which is about 10 kilometers to the east of Madrid. And the other was at another station called El Pozo de Raimundo. The carnage was staggering and the mayhem was immense. Now, who did this and why? What I told you so far were the basic facts about what happened that day. But this is now the second part of the story, and it is what made a tragedy even more tragic, but for different reasons. Now, the context is that this attack took place 3 days before the general elections on March 14th, 2004. The Conservative Party, the Partido Popular, or PP, had been the majority party of the government for 8 years under Prime Minister José María Aznar, who had declined to seek a third term. His second-in-command, Mariano Rajoy, while not quite as popular as Aznar, was still expected to win the election, according to the polls. Aznar's administration had been one of the most successful of Spain's young democracy. The economy was as healthy as it had ever been, basically, and Aznar's no-nonsense stance against the Basque terrorist group ETA, ETA, had helped precipitate its demise as an organization. His catchphrase was España va bien, or in English, Spain is doing just fine. And a lot of people there, or here, had a lot of reasons to feel that way. But there were warning signs that not everything was so hunky-dory. Aznar's most controversial decision was to actively support the United States in its invasion of Iraq. Spain was one of the few countries to do that. Many people in Spain were against that, and the Spaniards had taken to the streets by the millions to protest the war and asked the government to leave. They didn't subscribe to Spain's alliance with the United States, and they also feared, or at least some feared, that there would be repercussions as a result. And intelligence reports also cautioned that Al-Qaeda was possibly planning to carry out an act of revenge for Spain's role. But Spain's traditional biggest threat was ETA. As a terrorist organization, it had killed over 800 people over a period of about 30 years. And there were also reports, or at least some suggesting, that it was planning on doing something big before the elections. In fact, I actually remember a friend of mine, a lawyer, telling me a few weeks before he feared a huge bomb was going to rock the country. I remember it. He was unfortunately right, and I remember writing him. And I told him, I can't believe you called this. So anyway, when the news of the bombing came out, the initial reaction, the initial response was that it had to be Etta. Who else, basically? It was sort of a knee-jerk reaction. And many people on all points of the political spectrum and in many of the media outlets almost immediately attributed it to Etta. However, there were a couple of troubling things to consider. And the biggest one was that Etta, in general, never or very, very rarely targeted everyday citizens. They went after members of the armed forces, generals and colonels, or maybe members of the Guardia Civil, or politicians, judges, etc. And if a person unrelated to the attack was killed during the attack, it was basically collateral damage, but unintentional. This kind of attack, this massive, indiscriminate massacre, was highly uncharacteristic of ETA. It basically went against their general MO. In addition to that, doing something like this would have basically spelled the end of the armed group as an organization. It really would have done them in. So it didn't seem to make sense that they would do something that would almost be suicidal from their perspective. So not everyone was convinced. In short, discovering who had perpetrated the act was becoming essential to the elections. Because if it turned out to be ETA, most likely the Partido Popular would have won in a landslide. If, however, Islamic fanatics were behind the bombings, quite possibly the Socialist Party would gain a surprise victory at the polls. So you had this sort of big mystery and debate. Now, the next day, Friday, there was a massive demonstration. I think we're talking 1.5 to 2 million people in Madrid beneath a steady rain. It was a grim, sad evening, but everyone was together, and people said that the city was crying, mourning. By Friday night, the Al-Qaeda theory was beginning to gain traction. A van was found with explosive material that was different from what ETA normally used, and a tape with Islamic chants, prayers, and or chants from the Quran was found. And yet the Aznar government, most likely in an attempt to delay the truth, felt adamant that the most likely theory was that ETA had been the perpetrator of the attack. However, next day, Saturday, word spread like wildfire by way of a new system of alerting the population, texting with cell phones. And it was done to encourage people to go to the Partido Popular's headquarters in Madrid and protest and demand the truth. And protests erupted all over the country on that day before the election. The next day, the socialists won the election and stayed in power until 2011. The prime minister, Zapatero, one of the first things he did was pull out the Spanish forces from Iraq. Now, there is so much more we could talk about, and maybe I'll expand on this in a future podcast, but for the moment, I just wanted to give you the basic gist. It was a shocking few days, and it happened 20 years ago. I mean, this was a definite where were you when it happened moment in Spanish history. I definitely recall that fateful day. I remember basically everything about it, what the weather was like. I remember being at home in the morning and getting ready for work and listening to the radio in shock, but at the same time, not really knowing what exactly had happened. It was weird because the radio, they usually told you immediately what had happened, if it had been a bomb or if there had been just an assassination attempt with a gun. they had killed one person or five people, but they were sort of withholding information. And that lack of knowing is what made people feel that something really big was happening. I didn't live very far from where it took place, but I didn't notice the explosions. One memory that has stuck with me is the sound of sirens wailing all day long. It just was going on and on. It was incessant. And for a long time after that, every time I heard a siren, I was reminded of that day. It was almost like with 9/11, with airplanes flying overhead. Anyway, the Spanish response was amazing. It was really positive in their support. Like by lunchtime that day, that very Thursday, the blood banks were full and the hospitals were turning away volunteers. I mean, people just immediately went to the hospital to see if they could help, if there was anything that they could do. It's something that the Spanish do very well. And yet, ironically and sadly, in the background of this massive outpouring of support, you had this power struggle for who was going to become the next majority party in the elections 3 days later. You had this contrast of selflessness and selfishness, two major characteristics of human nature. And it's still in many ways a controversial subject. Anyway, in Madrid, there are two places where you can see memorials and tributes to the victims. One is at the Atocha station. The original monument has been renovated, and probably for the better. The previous one had good intentions, mind you, but it was a sad and almost impersonal tribute. A little bit ugly, I'll be honest with you. It didn't really say anything to anyone. And from the inside, it was sort of hard to locate. This one is more visible, and the reaction has been more positive. And then the other major place is in the Retiro Park. It's sort of tucked away in a corner of the park, but it is called the Forest of Remembrance. It is a small hill with 193 olive trees and cypresses, each one representing one of the fatal victims from the attack. That's also certainly well worth checking out. So there you have it. We'll stop there. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the very best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.